Okay. Do we have everyone here for the Customer Service Committee? Thank you very much. Mr. Troop is here. Let me start. The agenda is before us. Are there any questions or comments? Hearing none, approval of the agenda. We can move forward. Next is the approval of the minutes of May 9th.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Downs. Is there a second to the minutes? I'll second the motion. All those in favor?
Aye.
And opposed? Thank you. We have two items on our agenda today, action items, and we'll start with the rail service standards phase two. Mr. Troop and Ms. Barnstein.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Hudgens and members of the committee. This committee is continuing an important policy discussion that you've started on rail service standards that you began, believe it or not, back in March of 2012. As you reinforced in your bylaws of 2011, a key policy role for the board is adoption and review of standards for the quantity and quality of transit service. Service standards aren't a new concept for Metro. And for the board, board policy has been in place for Metro bus service about 15 years now, first to define what regional and non-regional bus service was, and then later, a few years later, to address bus crowding, running time, and non-rush ridership. For Metro rail standards have also existed since the beginning of service, but up until October of last year, when you formally adopted standards, they were just informal and used by staff to plan and manage service. Your action last fall, which is shown in the slide up here, formalized our three core rail standards, which is when we open and close on the weekdays and weekends, and then during the weekday rush periods, how frequent our trains should be, and in transit lingo, that's headways, as you know, and then how crowded our trains should be, which is also in transit lingo, loading or passengers per car. And that's at their peak load points, meaning in the rush period direction at the busiest points in our system. When you adopted these standards last fall, we talked about the value of having standards and why it's important to set them, and I think it's kind of worth repeating again as we take this up again. They're a set of criteria for ensuring quality, what our customers can expect on a normal day of service. We ensure this quality by measuring ourselves against the established standards and reporting to you regularly through vital signs on how we're doing. And I think this is the next point is really important because in the past people got confused by this. Standards are not a decision about service reduction. Rather, they provide guidance on how to deploy service today and how to plan for the future. They can certainly inform discussions and decisions about capital investment and operating resources, but they are really more for guidance and not for a plan to immediately reduce service or change service in some fashion. What we heard from you and our stakeholders, which includes the Riders Advisory Council and the Accessibility Advisory Committee, is that this next phase of rail standards should address our non-rush periods. So before you now for consideration are standards for normal weekday non-rush periods. And I think it would be important to note that with this action, the board will provide clear guidance about quality service during the period when 86% of our ridership occurs on Monday through Friday. There's some key considerations that we kept in mind as we developed these non-rush standards. As I mentioned already, they're in direct response to input from our stakeholders and from the board. Secondly, they reflect that our customers should expect a consistent quality of service no matter when they're using Metro during the weekdays, especially at our busiest stations. As we begin to report on how we're doing against the standards, the board's going to have more information than you currently have. And then finally, these standards reflect our current budgeted operating plans. And looking forward to the coordinated Silver Line rail and bus service plans that you had approved in April. So in other words, they're consistent with decisions that you've made already. So now let's move to the proposed weekday non-rush standards. How frequent should our trains be in the midday? From a customer's perspective, what this means is that the more frequent the service, the lower the average wait times for them. So on weekdays in the system core or in interline segments, the midday trains will run up to 6 minutes apart. So for key segments on the red line, that would be Shady Grove to Silver Spring. If you can see on the map up there, it's a little small. On the interline segments, orange-blue line from Rosalind to Stadium Armory, yellow-green from L'Enfant Plaza to Fort Totten, and yellow-blue from King Street to Pentagon. So those are up to 6 minutes apart during the midday. And then customers traveling on other segments, for the most part are at the end of the lines or some segments in the middle, would have experienced up to 12-minute wait times in the midday. It's important to know midday, we have a shoulder period, so we don't suddenly flip the switch from rush period to midday. We have, you know, some time that we're kind of taking a certain percentage of trains out of service after 9 a.m. And there's a gradual tapering off. So midday is really about a three-hour period from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Okay, next slide. How frequent should our trains be in the evenings after rush? On weekdays, our trains run up to 15 minutes apart. 15 minutes really reflects the red line service from end to end. And if you look at the other core interline segments, it's 10 minutes. So that would be orange-blue from, again, Rosalind to Stadium Armory, yellow-green from L'Enfant Plaza to Fort Totten, and yellow-blue from King Street to Pentagon. Those would be 10 minutes. Customers traveling in other segments would experience up to a 20-minute wait times in the evenings. And as a reminder, this is for normal service, so we do have track work happening during the weekdays in the very late evenings after 10 o'clock. So these standards would apply not to those track work times, but just to normal service times. Again, evening starts after we take all the, after the shoulder period comes and we take all the trains out of service. So it's a few hours after the 6 p.m. rush ends. Okay, moving now to how crowded should our trains be in the weekday non-rush period? From a customer point of view, that means can they get on a train and get a seat at our busiest stations? And what we are proposing for this standard is basically the same standard that you set for rush period as a starting point. Why? We want our customers to have, as I said, one of our considerations in developing these, we want them to experience a consistent quality of service no matter when they're using Metro during weekdays at our busiest stations. The same standard reflects an optimal 100 passengers per car, which means that all seats are taken, plus about half that many customers are standing. As we said back last fall, we looked at engineering load configurations and standard space per customer and feel that a range of 80 to 120 per car makes sense. These are averages over a whole train and over a one-hour time frame, so someone's actual experience could differ. I think of my own experience going to Gallery Place. Sometimes you run to get on that lot. I don't run. I walk fast to get onto that last train, and because of the way the station's set up, that tends to be a very crowded train. The how often, the frequency, and the how crowded, the capacity are counterbalancing standards. So as passengers per car crowding increases our capacity, we have the option to increase frequency to offset it and conversely. We did look at other peer transit agency service standards, New York, SEPTA, Boston, Chicago. We found that rail car crowding standards in the transit industry really run the gamut. Some have no standards, some have peak-only standards, some have different peak and off-peak. Some have an identical loading standard throughout the day. I think what we generally could say is that crowding standards that do exist for non-rush assume a certain level of standees as an acceptable reality. And then secondly, another basic reason to set a consistent quality standard for crowding, meaning the same standard we have during the rush hour, is that we don't have data yet available to suggest it should be something different. So it's an opportunity to kind of draw a line in the sand until we can begin to collect the data and report back to you. As is outlined in the report, we currently manually collect sample data on the rail car crowding at specified locations for rush periods only. And those are literally, you know, people with clipboards counting with clickers and marking it down. And this manual data collection method, while it sounds a little old-fashioned, is really what most other transit agencies do. I think we found one that's kind of using some manual counting plus a model. And we would need additional resources to collect this data during the non-rush, and we're looking at different options right now and cost to collect it, and we'll be coming back to you to talk about how we can go forward with that and start reporting, hopefully towards the latter part of 2014. And then when we're up and running and able to start providing data to you on how we're doing on crowding during the off-peak, you may want to take up the conversation again about this standard. So the next slide is kind of all this just put together, all the things we just talked about. The recommendation is that non-rush frequency midday is 6 and 12 minutes and evening 15 and 20 minutes. And non-rush passengers per car would be the same standard as we set for the rush. And then finally, as next steps, as mentioned, we're going to look at our resources and look at different technologies that can assist with collecting the information we don't currently have about railcar crowding for the non-rush. And as we get more information, we'll be coming back to you with consideration on how to move forward along with a timeline on when we can start reporting that to you next year. We do currently already collect the data for the frequency standard for non-rush, so we'll be able to monitor and report that to you regularly in the vital signs report. So you'll see that in the next vital signs, assuming you adopt the standard. Okay. And that concludes my presentation. I can answer any questions that you might have.
Well, I'll open it up for questions. And this is a continuation of our process in terms of now we will have the entire service guidelines in terms of the entire system from peak to non-service. Let me start with Mrs. Giancola.
Thank you for your brief. On the recommendation page, can you go back one? It would be helpful also if this is kind of published somewhere to actually remind folks what the rush hours and non-rush hour times are. So, I mean, it just, you know, I always kind of forget when rush hour technically ends versus it starts, so it's a little more helpful to the rider.
Okay.
What else did I have? I guess that's it for now.
Okay, Mr. Bolger.
Thank you, Adrian. Should this board resolution, Madam Chair, be amended based on the fact that you said you don't have the data or the resources to get the data? So should this be premise somehow, so we're not locked in stone here until you get the actual data? How should we treat this? But, you know, it seems to me the methodology is fine, but the data is sort of missing.
The data is delayed. Yeah,
delayed.
The report
okay.
will be delayed back to you. I suppose that could be incorporated into the resolution.
And
defer to you on
the idea of at least deferring the implementation part? Is that your
well, sorry, yeah, to qualify, until we have better information.
Well, let me hear the discussion, then I want to have a comment relative to that. Yes.
I'm not a member of this committee, may I ask a question?
So, mm-hmm. Sure.
Thanks. One, is there a protocol? I don't want to imbalance the state of the world. It's important. Just a quick question, though. In talking with some of our jurisdictional staff, one of the questions that they raised in my mind is that this – it's around data. The silver line data isn't factored into this standard yet. The anticipated impact of the silver line in terms of our.
We did take that into consideration, yes, in developing the standard. And I know Tom Harrington's here if you have any like specific questions about the silver line service plan. But we did take that into consideration. In fact, we have some slides in the appendix that refer to the silver line. I don't know if you can put those up here for frequency.
Yes,
the standard. We don't, in other words, we don't need to change the standard to accommodate when the silver line opens.
I didn't understand that they had. I thought that the data wasn't ready in terms of the analysis. That's what I was trying to understand. Have we?
That's
we've
for
done
the loading. The loading. How crowded the cars are. This is the frequency. We do have the data for that. We collect that regularly, and that's basically our rail on time performance mm-hmm. information that you get on mm-hmm. a normal basis.
Okay, so for me, just a good educational process for me, sure. If you could kind of separate out the data on the loading versus, and I understand the frequency, mm-hmm. but doesn't the loading drive the frequency?
They're definitely related, but they're different measures. They definitely interact with each other. So how often do the trains, you know, come, how, and whether they're on time. And then secondly, how crowded are the cars?
But it influences how frequently we set the frequency, correct?
Yes, they interact with each other.
But we haven't drilled down yet. We haven't finalized that analysis yet on the loading.
We only collect data for the rush periods.
Help me out here.
Yeah. What we're doing is setting standards here, okay? So that, and we're saying that from a non-rush hour period, the frequency should be at least this, or the headway should be at least this. If the loadings on the trains, produce overcrowded conditions, going well above 100, then we may decide to run one particular line more frequently, but it'll be within the standards.
Yeah.
That's why you want to have a standard, even though we don't have all the data for it today. You want to have a standard that says what your loading should be, which we're saying should be no different than the recommendation, no different than what the loading is during the rush hour. So you're comfortable between 80 and 100. That's where you would like to be. You could live up to 120, but you might make a decision that if, I can't think of a line that's doing this today, but if you were running, 110 or something like that in terms of passenger loading, and you could mitigate that by increasing the frequency, you would make that decision. It would be within your standards. The other thing that you would also want to look at is the reverse. You may have a, headway standard today, but you're running with such low ridership, you may want to come back and revisit that standard.
So that, and I get that, and I do understand that. I guess I'm just trying to understand that we're still assessing the loading and how that's going to impact us. That's the question.
No, what we're doing is setting standards, and we're saying we don't want the frequency to be any greater than whatever the times are up there in the off peak, as a matter of convenience for the customer and attracting people. You could set a tighter standard with costs attached to it, but we're saying
right.
This is the recommendation. This is what we do today, and it appears to be somewhat satisfactory to the customers. We're also saying that from a passenger comfort viewpoint in the off peak, that we adopt a similar standard to what we have during the rush hours. That's just the standard. If the board says, really, we'd like everybody to have a seated ride during the off-peak hour, then we would adopt a different standard. But that's not what the recommendation is.
I mean, in the case of peak standards, that's an engineering issue. How many cars, how many trains can you push through choke points in the system? These are policies. These are judgments as to what best serves the customer. And you're saying based on some customer contact and other research, you think this fulfills the bill. And it may. I think one of the real weak points to me is the 20 minutes in the late evenings, because if you're using two different lines, guaranteed it'll be 20 minutes here and 20 minutes there. I would hope in the budget process over the future, we could look at what some of the options are. We may find it's too expensive, but we might want to look at options to improve service, and what would they cost?
I think we've pursued the standards issue to be able to have it be a dynamic decision-making tool as circumstances and ridership changes. I don't disagree with establishing these standards for off-peak, but they're not a decision. They're because there is no data collection mechanism. It is not a dynamic measure that you can adjust over time until there is a dependable way to be able to actually measure what's happening in the system against the standards. And I don't know if at some point the new fare system will allow us better data and information about loadings by time of day and direction, et cetera.
There's two pieces here. We do measure the headway frequency, the loadings. We will come forward in our business plan with, this is the cost to measure it.
Okay.
And certainly if you were to use data that you collect from the FAIR system in a model, per se, you always do need to validate that with human counting because you have to account for people's travel behavior. So the model may assume people are going to take a certain path on their trip, the shortest path, but in fact they may not want to make a transfer, so they may take the longer. So you really have to kind of validate what a model would say. So it's always going to require some human interaction to validate a model. And those are the types of things we're looking at as we start to measure this going forward.
Well, let me just try to do get more information in my head around this. So if we did this standard for the off-peak, when Silver Line opens, we're going to be, unless you make an adjustment, you're going to have trains going from Roslyn to Stadium Armory every 4 minutes. Yeah. So then then the question is that, you know, feasible, or should we reduce the train lengths or the number of cars? Because I don't know if we have a budget, if the budget's going to sustain that kind of frequency.
I have to take a look at that, but what the frequencies are. But I would say from a practical thing, I do not see cutting and adding trains between off-peak and peak hours. That's not going to happen. But we'll take a look at the frequency.
Okay.
I think what we're trying to do is to start setting a standard by which we want to generate a measurement that says how we're performing best. And that's really what we're looking for. And I think the question of whether or not we should move forward with the implementation may not be the most important thing at this point. I think the point of moving forward gives us an opportunity to get something in place that the customer, as well as we from the board and the authority, can say, how are we measuring? How are we performing? And how is the customer's experience? And if, in the Silver Line particularly, I think you want to be able to deliver the same level of service.
It's going to be better.
Well, it may be better, and that is better. It may be better to the advantage maybe of others as well throughout the larger system.
Make sure we're doing
unintended consequences. But I think the point is, can it be adjusted?
Yeah,
and that's that it can be adjusted, but we need to be aware of what the cost is, what the impact to service delivery, and those things.
Just following up on that, mm-hmm. Counting the number of people who are on the trains tells us something. Mm-hmm. We can't count the number of people who are not on the trains because they've chosen to not use the service. And remember, they've probably chosen not to use it in two directions. So, you know, I think we need to be dynamic in terms of marketing what our opportunities are.
Thank you. And the whole discussion here is helpful for me. And I'm not reticent to set a standard, and I think we should. I completely agree with you. It's, for me, the nexus is the setting the standard, and then if we set a standard, our goal should be to achieve the standard. And to the extent that we learn that our data suggests that we're not hitting that standard, we have to have the resources to make sure that we meet it. And that's the gap for me. How do we... It's just, if we're sufficiently resourced in terms of the amount of boarding to believe that we can reasonably achieve this within the budget constraint that we have, then if we're off by a mark, and we're probably not, but if we're off by a substantial mark, then we're not achieving the standard, but it's going to cost substantially more to get there. These are just things we need to have our eyes wide open on, and I know that you do, but I know as a board we have to have that, because it's very important to do, and that's my discomfort. It's just not the standard, but the resources to achieve the standard, and that's my concern.
I would also say, you know, for example, in the last vital signs, we reported on the loads for the AM and PM rush for November, December, and January for 3 months of data that we had, and there were some spots where we were kind of below the standard that you had set, but it gives us an opportunity to talk to you about why that might be. For example, we've added 9% more rail cars to get ready for Silver Line, so there's more cars out than there have been in the past. Also, that's during the holiday season, so there may be, that's only 3 months of data, you know, that doesn't really make a trend. The next time you get vital signs, you'll have 7 months of data, and you can start to look at if it's a consistent issue. Mr. Downs.
It strikes me that while consist is a difficult thing to manage, we have made a decision in the past based on off-peak loading that a number of trains on the Red Line would turn at Silver Spring and a number of trains on the other end would turn at Glenmont versus Shady Grove. This is an attempt, I think, to rationalize those kinds of decisions about train loading, peak and off-peak, better equipment utilization, better service dependability and reliability. And I think the interest in Silver Line is a framework ultimately for trying to make a decision around something like that in the process at both ends. If the off-peak loadings are inefficient because they drop below the 80, the choice is to do what we've already done on the Red Line. And this is, I think, the framework for trying to make those kinds of decisions. So it's...
And the opportunity to come back and make those kinds of adjustments are really the important part of this thing. Do I have a motion that we move forward on the standards? Moved by Mr. Downey. Is there a second? We do need a committee member. Second. Moved by Ms. Hampshire-Cohen, and I'm glad to second it. All those in favor, is there further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
And opposed. Okay, thank you. The next item on the agenda is the approval to hold the public hearings on the bus service adjustments. And the bus service adjustments are the procedures that we've been using to make those adjustments to services that the staff has evaluated and find that will be a better delivery of service to the customer or to deliver the service. So, Mr. Reichler.
Thank you very much. As we have in the last couple of years, we have come before the board at this time of year to ask for permission to hold public hearings on potential service adjustments and, on this case, tariff changes. Next page. What we have found in the past 2 years, if we've had the opportunity to evaluate services, make actual changes, we've seen a significant increase in ridership on these routes and a major improvement on-time performance. Essentially, ridership over the last year has been flat, on-time performance has gone up about 1.2%. But when we're able to go in and make the adjustments, we find that we get these kind of results. So we think this process is very productive and makes the system much more efficient. That's great. But as we've mentioned in the past, we've been talking about service standards. We have service standards. We share those with the board. We share them with the jurisdictions. We're getting more and more information from passenger counters so that we have more and more information. So we review the criteria that either the board has established or staff works with. We have public meetings. I think Jim and his troops are out probably 100 public meetings a year, talk to jurisdictional staff, talk about changes that are of interest to jurisdictions, changes that are of interest to the passenger, changes that are of interest to our staff. We develop the recommendations, and we come before you in this process at this time and ask that we, the changes that are listed in the resolution, that we take those out for more input from the public and in a more formal process, and that we come back to you in November with recommendations. And as a result of the process, you know, we'd like to hold, first of all, we'd like, you know, to hold one or more public hearings in each jurisdiction, and that would be the, you know, the the preference of the board. We want to gather this information, come back in November. We want to make sure that the process complies with Title VI, and so that the Title VI folks are totally involved in this process, and then we would make the recommendations. And the recommendations, again, will be based to the goal is to improve reliability, to improve service, ridership, fare box recovery, the on-time performance. The intent of these processes is not to increase the number of buses that are used in the service, and it is a cost-neutral approach to adjust some services that are less effective to improve services that need more more service. And I think in the past we are confident that our changes, if they disadvantage one person, we make improvements for at least 13 to 15 other people. So we think it's a process. I do want to point out, though, in the resolution that we are asking for discussion on two tariff issues, which is we haven't done in the past in this process. The first is to make it explicit that smoking is prohibited at WMATA-owned and WMATA-controlled bus bays. We want to strengthen. We get a number of complaints about people smoking in the bus bays, in the shelters, and we want to try to bring that to a halt and give a little more strength to the police. And also we want to start in preparation for the Crystal City Potomac Yard Transitway. We want to ensure that cover off a board fare collection and to treat the failure to produce a fare receipt as fare evasion, so that we will be able to have the enforcement that we need to advance this new technology and service level of having people make their payment off board and carry a receipt onto the bus. Additionally, there are two service changes I'd like to mention. First of all, if you look at the list under the district, you'll see that the D4 and the E routes are on the list. This was on the list last year. We've not completed the process of making the final adjustments and just to so we want to make sure we can put it back on the list of those discussions and final changes to those services can be made. And the other one I want to mention is that two of the jurisdictions have mentioned that they wanted the 5A, the service to the Dulles Airport bus, to be on the list. I'd have to say from a staff standpoint, we don't agree with this, but again, we think we want the public to input, get their comments on it. We've had a study from the RAC. We've had a survey from Allison Simon and her group. But again, I think public input will give us more indication. I think blogs are already providing input on potential changes to the 5A. But again, we have a number of changes. We enjoy going out to the public, getting their input, then discussing with the jurisdictions, and hopefully come back to you in November with a cost neutral, with some of these changes being put in place, and we'd ask the board for the approval of a public hearing process. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Are there any questions? I have one for the more. I'm sorry, I didn't see.
I think this has been a very good process over the last couple of years, separating it from the budget. This is not a budget exercise.
Right.
It's a service exercise. Typically, we have gone out with a package that is pretty well balanced. It pays for itself. Anything that's added, something else would have to be subtracted. Is this still essentially the same?
Absolutely. The jurisdictions know that we're not just going to add services. We're going to have to make adjustments, and that's a little
sum game.
And we don't anticipate that all of these will be made, but some combination of these we hope
to combination that is still a
make some small steps towards improvement to make cost effectiveness of the service a little bit better.
Thank you.
Zero-sum game, yeah. No additional buses, no additional dollars required, so we don't see this as a – it's in this committee rather than a finance committee because we don't see this as a dollar issue.
Anybody else? Mr. Downs.
A question perhaps more to the general manager. I know that the board's not going to have its briefing on the new FTA requirements under Title VI. Until I think the September meetings. Is it possible to take a look at those new requirements and how they would impact this set of bus hearings as kind of a trial run about detailed impacts about where we are already in compliance with those requirements and where we might need to make some changes.
You mean in terms of conducting the public hearings themselves? I think that's our intent, and I want to double check, is to proceed in accordance with the new requirements.
Yes, that's yes. Our plan.
Good.
Okay. Deborah Corum and her group are involved in this process, yes.
I just have one question of data. If you could provide ridership on 5A data, just could forward that to us, or those of us in the
annual ridership, 381,000. It's our best cost recovery route of over 80%.
And that's
30-35 minute service, but we can give you a more detailed breakdown of ridership, and we'll get that provided to you.
All right. Any other questions? Hearing none, is there a motion to move forward with the a public hearing? Moved by Mr. Bolger and seconded by second the motion. Any discussion further? All those in favor?
Aye.
And
aye.
Opposed? Thank you very much. I just want to call attention, there is a customer service subsequent agenda. I want to share with the fact that we've had the question raised about to the board regarding customer pledges, commitments that we can make. We are going to handle that through the customer service committee. We've spoken with the RAC to talk about that. I did get there, and I was teed up quite well to talk about customer service. So that will be coming forward in subsequent committee meetings. Okay. Any other business to come forward?
Question,
yes.
I know. I don't believe it was so much a safety issue as a customer service issue, but I wonder if the CEO would like to comment on last night's service disruptions.
Yes, and I know you appreciate we don't have all the details in. But last night we did have a service disruption. A train went into break an emergency just short of Clarendon on the outbound, as I recall. We had police got there pretty quickly. We, under the new rules, we also had technicians get on the train fairly quickly. They could not resolve the issue. It required us to bring in a rescue train. To offload the passengers. As it turned out, we did offload them, and then we also pulled with that rescue train the disabled train out of the area and finally cleared it. The whole event took approximately 2 hours to do it. We made extensive announcements in terms of metro alerts throughout. And as the situation developed, you know, initially I think we announced half-hour delays, and we moved to more than an hour delays. We did try to single-track around it, but that causes a lot of delays for folks because trains do back up. It was at the rush hour. The people on the train still had air conditioning except for one car, but the police moved them to the other car, so they were in comfort even though they were being delayed. There's no injuries in the evacuation to the adjacent train. And as I said, we did operate around it throughout. All our message signs were up, announcing what was going on. We certainly apologize to the passengers for that delay. The apparent cause of the train being in emergency was a 1000 series car that had some it was leaking some hydraulic fluid, and therefore it automatically went into emergency, which it should do. That's a safety device. And I will be happy when the 1000 series cars are gone. Yeah.
Thank you. We'll wait for the full report. With that, we're adjourned. Thank you.